This is I Ask They Answer on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
National Treasure with a quarter to go at Pimlico has a neck and front from Blazing Sevens. Mage is called on to run, and Red route one down to the inside. National Treasure, Blazing Sevens trying to get by. They're on even terms, and head-to-head with a furlong left to go. Mage has to quicken up from third. Blazing Sevens, National Treasure fighting back on the inside. Blazing Sevens on the outside. Blazing Sevens, National Treasure. Oh, what a Preakness! It's National Treasure who gets the lead late. Bites Blazing Sevens all the way down the stretch. Mage was third. Red Rot won. And then it was Chase the Chaos. Perform and copy with Chris.
Well, last year, National Treasure gave Bob Baffert a record 8th Preakness win, and in doing so, denied Derby winner Mage a shot at the Triple Crown. Dave Rodman had the call. Which Derby winners were the biggest surprises after losing in Baltimore? Plus, has the time come for Heisa to hit the pause button on its testing and medication policies? And how well do Dale and Tim know the middle jewel of racing's Triple Crown? We're going to find out after a few rounds of Preakness trivia coming up here this morning. Those topics and much, much more straight ahead on a Preakness morning edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin, all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business, and all starting just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Well, every week we emphasize the fact that we love when listeners submit their questions for Dale and Tim here on I Ask, They Answer. And we have a couple of listener questions coming up on today's show. We kick it off with one that comes via email from Shane in North Carolina. And guys, I found this one very interesting. Shane wants to know, which Kentucky Derby winner were you most surprised to see lose the Preakness? And for Shane, he said it was Always Dreaming in 2017, who finished 8th at odds of 4-5. So, Tim Wilkin, which one were you most surprised get beat in Baltimore?
Well, I was a big fan of Orb in 2013. After he won the Derby, came to Baltimore, I believe he went off at 3-5, and he could only manage a 4th. Behind Dwayne Lucas's Oxbow, who won the race. And I remember Dwayne's quote after the race, because Oxbow was 15-1. Dwayne said, "I get paid to steal dreams." I always got a kick out of that. But the fact that Orb didn't fire in the Derby, he never won a race again. And another one, too, that I'm sure Dale might want to chime in on this one, was Barbaro in 2006. I mean, he didn't lose the Derby. He didn't finish the Derby. It was one of the most shocking results, in modern Triple Crown history when he broke through the gate and then he broke down coming down the stretch. It was just a horrendous, awful thing to have to witness. And your heart went out to the connections of Barbaro. That was... I mean, maybe not the surprising thing outcome that the Derby winner didn't win, but definitely the most shocking one because he didn't finish.
Yeah, Barbaro by far the most tragic one, for sure. What a great racehorse he was. I would say Fusiashi Pegasus, going back a few years. I thought he was a super horse. He made a sale topper yearling, and he was a Kentucky Derby winner, great connections. I think Fupeg was a big shock. You have to go back a little ways, though, but I was a big fan of that horse.
Yeah, like that was 2000, Dale?
I think so. It was 2000.
2000, yep.
Yeah.
You got to step back a little ways, but I love that horse. Neil Drysdale, Kent Sarmore, he was absolutely a special horse.
Was that Red Bullet that beat him?
Red Bullet, yeah, good call, Tim.
Yeah, I didn't have to look that one up. I knew it. Some things I know.
Yeah, you didn't have to do the research there.
No. I'll give you the one that did not shock me at all was Animal Kingdom getting beat, because I knew my man Dale Romans was coming loaded for bear.
Yeah, put it on him that day. That was pretty fun, Triple Crown.
Did you go into that one thinking you were going to win it?
Yeah, I did. I liked my horse. I mean, I knew he was the horse to beat. He's a really good horse, and that's about the time Graham became a good friend. We had a lot of fun that year.
Yeah, what was the key to Shackelford beating Animal Kingdom that day, Dale?
A little shorter distance, and pace was a little bit different, and I think that was the key. And Shackelford was a big, strong swimmer, so it might have helped. I don't know about Animal Kingdom. I wasn't around him much, but two-week turnaround was nothing for Shackelford. Like, he's one of those horses that talked about it. I told him in an interview the other day, they're talking about horses coming back in 2 weeks and winning the Preakness. He was a horse, the more you did with him, the better he got.
Yeah, when you look at the chart, you see that Shackelford bobbled at the start of that race and still found himself close up to the early pace, drew off to win by a half a length. Or I can't say drew off, but he held off Animal Kingdom by a half a length. And Animal Kingdom also broke slow in that race, and he had to come all the way from 13th. So neither one of them had the cleanest beginning that day.
No, they didn't. They absolutely didn't. That was a strange day for me. I won the Dixie the race before that. And so with Patty O'Prado coming off of a long layoff. And then I'm walking over, and the reporters, I'm getting interviewed on network TV, and the phone keeps buzzing in my pocket. I finally answered it, and it's my help back at this test barn saying he's limping, and he had cracked his sesamoid, which I knew what it was going to be if it didn't happen for a little while after a race. It had to be a sesamoid injury. So I'm thinking about Patty O'Prado. And then Shackelford, he looks like the groom's flying a kite and trying to saddle him. He's up in the air so high, and he's sweating. I'm trying to get the tack on him. And Tammy keeps saying, "What is wrong with you?" And before the race, I'm so down. I got my one of the best horses I ever had in my life is limping in the test barn, and Shackelford's washed out. Everybody on TV is giving him no chance, and I'm standing there getting ready to watch that race, and nobody knows what's going on. But it was a long day. Ended up being a great day. Patty was fine. He had to retire and went on to be a stallion, and Shackelford got the job done. And that night after the Preakness, they have a great big party in the barn, at the barn. It's right. A lot of fun, yeah. Especially when you've won the race. And somebody asked to pet him, and I let him, and somebody else. And before the night was over, the whole party was in there petting on Shackelford. And that's a horse that would eat your life. But he was such a ham, he just ate it up, let everybody pet on him, didn't bite a single person.
What time did you guys leave the barn that night?
What time did that? I don't remember. I think the sun was coming up.
Dale, those are great memories, great story, and I know you're going to get to relive that another day in the future. Let's turn our attention now to a friend of ours that we welcome to the program every single week with his sound bites, and he's another person that knows a thing or two about winning the Preakness Stakes. That is Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito, as Dale and Tim get to tell me if the following statements are right or wrong.
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
All right, guys, three of these for you this week. We're going to kick it off with this one. Mystic Dan will be going for the Triple Crown in 3 weeks at Saratoga. Is that right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
What do you think, Dale, right or wrong?
I can't say it's wrong. I mean, he looks like the horse to beat in this race, and he looked good training before he left for Pimlico, and from what I hear, he's doing well there. With Baffert out now, it looks like it's his race to lose. So I'm going to say right.
So with my heart, I definitely want to say right. We haven't had a horse going for the Triple Crown since Justify, I believe, and that was 18. And Mystic Dan might be one of those horses that gets right just at the right time. I mean, a lot of horses have done that at Triple Crown time, like Funny Side. You know, he had just the phenomenal the Derby and Preakness, and then, you know, things didn't go well in the Belmont. But, you know, he was so right between the Derby and the Preakness. Maybe Mystic Dan's the same way. And if the weather holds true and we get the rain, remember, Mystic Dan in the Southwest on a muddy track rolled by 8 lengths. So that part of me wants to say, yes, we're going to be going for a Triple Crown, but it's not going to be easy. I mean, even though Muth is out, who a lot of people thought was going to be the horse, there's some other horses in here that could, step up and bite him. Catching Freedom is
is no joke. I mean, with Brad Cox bringing him here after 2 weeks, which is something he doesn't do very often, come in after the two weeks, the fourth place finisher in the Kentucky Derby, and two Tuscan goals from Chad Brown. I mean, this is the same MO that Chad won his two other Preaknesses with. The horse came in with cloud computing and early voting. Both came in here with three starts under their belt and won it. Tuscan Gold got three starts. So I'm not, and Dwayne Lucas has got two in here. So, I mean, it's a nice field. But, okay, if you're going to put a gun to my head today, I'm going to say, yeah, let's have a Triple Crown bid in Saratoga. It's going to be crazy enough. Let's make it more crazy.
Do you think we can consider it a legitimate Triple Crown if he wins it, since it's not, that the Belmont would not be run at the traditional mile and a half distance?
What was that question again?
Would we be able to consider it a legitimate Triple Crown if Mystic Dan were to pull it off in 3 weeks, if he wins the Preakness and then wins the Belmont, considering the fact the Belmont is not going to be run at a mile and a half? It's a mile and a quarter this year at Saratoga.
It might have an asterisk, but it'll be a small asterisk.
There's going to be the traditionalists that say, well, he didn't run in a mile and a half, so it's not the same. If Mystic Dan were to be going for the Triple Crown, let's say he wins it, there's going to be those that say no. But, you know, still winning those three races in 5 weeks takes a very special racehorse.
Yep.
And a mile and a quarter, it's not like it's a mile and eighth. It's the classic distance. And, you know, how many people really want to run their horses at a mile and a half? How many of them ever run a mile and a half after the Belmont? Not a lot. So, you know, I think if he's able to do it, you just tip your hat to him and applaud for, you know, a job well done. He's got a long way to go before he gets there.
Still a tremendous accomplishment. He'll have to get past the middle jewel this afternoon first before he can even think about wearing that Triple Crown. All right, topic number two, Ed in Kentucky emails the show, and Ed asks, if bringing back handicap races for older horses, which would offer meaningful weight allowances, would encourage horses to stay in training and have longer careers. Guys, what do you think? Is that idea right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Dale?
I don't think it encourages them to stay around. There's too much money when they go to be a stallion right now. But I love handicap races, and that's a good question. A lot of people don't even remember how many there used to be. And that gave every horse, you know, parity is important in every sport, and it gave parity to our sport. And I wish they would just bring them back for no other reason than they're good quality races. And also, you like to see a horse like Forgo or some of the greats that won with a lot of weight on their back.
Exactly. I mean, you remember Forgo carried 137 pounds. The horse Discovery carried 139. Those were the old days of the iron horses when they had these handicap races. And yeah, I get what Dale says about the shift, the game has shifted to the breeding side more so than the racing side, and it's too bad for the fans. But, you know, having those old the old handicap races where you really could tell a super horse that carried all of this weight. Unfortunately, I think those days are gone forever. We'll never see it again. But, I would long for days like that again.
Yeah, I think racing secretaries just got tired of being yelled at. They would get yelled at for making somebody too heavy or somebody too light. But I love those old races.
Yeah, fantastic
racing
question.
Yeah, racing secretary couldn't win.
Yep, good question. I keep them coming each and every week, and we'll continue to include them here in the program. One more right or wrong topic before we get to another listener question, and then trivia coming up for Dale and Tim in the final segment. Trainer George Weaver could be facing a 2-year suspension following Heise's finding of a medication called metformin in a post-race sample of one of his horses. Weaver is now the 7th trainer in less than a year to be cited for a metformin positive, one of the most prescribed drugs in the U.S. to treat type 2 diabetes, which, from the outside looking in, makes this look like it could be another cross-contamination situation. Guys, I say enough is enough. The time has come for Heise to hit the pause button, blow up the current protocols, and take a closer look at cross-contamination before reintroducing a new plan. Am I right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Dale, you're the horseman. What do you think?
Something needs to be done about all these contaminations. I don't understand metformin. They say it's a lot different than like methamphetamine. It's in a hard capsule. It can't be touched and transferred. And that's where they're hanging their hat on. I don't know about some of my urinating the stall, but if the horse can pick it up from that. But we need to figure out what's going on one way or another. I don't know what it is. How these people are getting their careers in jeopardy over cross-contamination, if that's what it is. Something needs to be done. I'm not a scientist, but it sure smells fishy.
Should HISA take a step back now and put everything on pause, or at least scale back on the way that they're doing things until they can figure this part of it out?
I think so. I'll say you're right.
Timmy?
It's definitely a problem because, you know, the trainer has to take ultimate responsibility for anything that happens in this barn. I mean, George Weaver has been, from everything I know about George, a very solid horse person. He always has been. I think he's, in his 22-year career, I think he's had two positives. And, you know, the contamination with the thing, something has to be done. I mean, should all the grooms start wearing those zoot suits that they wear in NASA or whatever, and never, you know, everything's clean? Because there's going to be contamination with humans handling horses if someone's taking some kind of drug for their own ailments or otherwise. It's going to show up in a horse, and you know the trainer's got to be the one that takes the responsibility for that. But you know, for all this stuff that they're talking about with George now, you know, having to disband his stable and all this, I mean, this is a man's livelihood. You can't take that away from him. I think it's wrong, and I'm not anti-HISA. I think they're doing the best they can, but I think they really got to reel it in a little bit on this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's time to take a closer look at the way things are being handled and take a step back and then move forward with a new plan after what we've learned over the course of the past year or so. Okay, that is Right or Wrong. We'll welcome Nick Zito back to the program next Saturday morning. Two more topics to get to. The final is a few rounds of Preakness trivia with Dale and Tim, but our next question comes from George in Louisville, comes via email, and George wants to know that he's heard for years that a horse wearing front bandages for the first time is a bad sign. Other horsemen have told him that bandages simply provide a little extra support. So, Dale, he has a question for you. He wants to know if bandages can protect a horse from getting nicks and cuts during a race, and if so, why don't all horses wear bandages on race day, and is it possible that bandages could actually hinder a horse's performance? How does it work?
I don't know. You can ask 10 different people, and they'll give you 10 different answers. So a lot of people say that just the support, you know, like taping your ankles before a basketball game gives a little extra support. I don't particularly put front bandages on many horses. Horses also do what we call running down. That's where their foot hits and they slide on their heel. And a lot of times they'll make a sore spot on the back of their heel. And they do it in behind more than they do it in front. And that's one reason that you see so many bandages on the back and not on the front. It's not to really for support as much as it is protect them from sliding and getting a sore on the back of their heel. Some of them will do it up front, and they put it on there. But, you know, you see a lot of trainers, like David Vance, when it comes to mind, when he was training, ran every horse in front bandages. I never stopped and asked him why. But I run very few. I think, actually, that they're used less now than they used to be, but they used to be overused, I thought.
Interesting. George.
With front bandages, sometimes do they use it in claiming races to throw the scent off somebody that wants to claim a horse, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a little bit of part of it. I know back when I was a kid, my dad would have me sometimes put front bandages on and put a little piece of cotton down the back of the tendon so it looked like a horse had a boat tendon, and we would take him over in front bandages. A lot of gamesmanship going on there in the claiming ranks.
George, that's a fantastic question. Again, if you have a question for Dale and Tim, email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. We'll get it worked in or post it on our social media pages, and we'll work it in that way as well. All right, one more topic. We're down to about the final 5 minutes of the program, so we're going to boogie through this last one. I want to know, how well do Dale and Tim know racing's middle jewel? So I've put together some trivia questions. Let's see how well they do. All right, guys, here's the first one. I'm going to start you off with a real easy one, too. The winner of the Travers – has their colors painted on the canoe, which sits in the infield pond at Saratoga. Which tradition involving the owner's silks takes place at Pimlico after the winner crosses the finish line? Timmy?
We know this one, right, Dale?
Yeah, it's easy. Go ahead.
Well, actually, there's two of them. They paint the weather vane up on the infield with the colors, and there's also a jockey statue that's right across from the stakes barn, and they paint that every year in the winner's colors of the Preakness, I believe. Yeah, I'm positive of that because I've seen it happen. They do it the next day.
Yep, boom. Good job, guys. I was looking for weather vane, but we'll accept the other one too, Timmy, for bonus points there. Well done. All right, trainer Bob Baffert.
Call a friend on this one.
Trainer Bob Baffert holds the record for most Preakness victories with 8. Name the trainer who is second behind Bob Baffert.
I'm going to say Wayne Lucas was 6.
I think he's right.
You're both wrong.
Wait a minute.
He surpassed Robert Wyndham Walden, who has 7 victories in the Preakness. He did that from 1878 to 1882. Dwayne Lucas sits in third position. He could move into a tie for second with a win later today.
We weren't supposed to know that one.
Yeah. How about this? I'll give you this one's really interesting. Over the years, the Preakness has been run on every day of the week except for one. What day is the only day it has never been run?
Everybody knows it's Wednesday.
Everyone knows it's Thursday.
Sunday.
Everyone does.
There you go. It is Sunday. The only day it's been held on Tuesday 14 times, Friday 13, Monday 6, Wednesday 5, and Thursday 4 times, but never held on a Sunday.
Jeepers.
Huh.
Yeah.
I do research.
How about this one? Yeah. Who is the only jockey to win the Preakness 3 consecutive years?
Timmy, that's your question.
Is this modern times?
Dale, Dale, you should get it.
I'm going to say it's Pat Day.
Yeah, I'll go with Pat Day because he won a bunch.
You're both correct. It is Pat Day. 1994, Tabasco Cat. 95, Timber Country. 96, Louis Couture's. His
Dale,
hat trick.
The last question, we got to bet it all.
All right, this one's tough. I actually had to research this one some, guys, so here you go. You might get it, though. 10 Preakness winners have sired Preakness winners. Can you name the most recent horse to do so?
Wasn't Shackleford.
Nope.
You got me. No idea.
How about...
Timmy's Googling.
I'm drawing a blank.
Tim's Googling.
I'm not Googling. I don't have my computer in front of me. I'm sitting here in an office at Pimlico because it's so noisy here. I'm gonna go out and into mischief.
It is Curlin. Who won the Preakness in 2007 and then sired Exaggerator in 2016.
Okay.
Yep.
We did okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I told you. A couple of those were going to be a little challenging.
Yeah, we got one out of four.
We got two.
Two, okay.
Yeah.
All right, two.
The Baron walks away the winner of that round of Preakness trivia.
Hey, you had 500. Four questions, 2 for 4. We're in the Hall of Fame. Betting 500.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, let's see if you can get into the Hall of Fame with your final comment of the week. It's time for the West Point of the Week. Tim will go first after I remind you that owning a racehorse with West Point Thoroughbreds is a lifestyle investment for your entire family. It is a smart, fun way for owners to enjoy being an instant insider and access the major leagues of racing for a fraction of the cost of doing it alone. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Tim, what is your West Point of the Week?
Well, I've been here in Baltimore for the last week working for the Maryland Jockey Club. And there's some people here that wanted me to send along hellos to Dale Romans because they see him all the time in Florida. It's the people in their press office, Dave Joseph, Ed Gray, and Phil Janak, and Clark Spencer, saying they wanted to make sure I mentioned them to Dale. So I just did.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of them. All good people. And that kind of leads into my point of the week. This weekend in racing is absolutely my favorite. Everybody loves the Derby, but there's so much pressure going on there. You go up to the Preakness, you get treated like a king. The press is great. Everyone at Pimlico does a wonderful job. So I just want to tip my hat to them for this weekend that they're putting on. I know they're doing it again this year. Wish I was there.
Next year.
Next year, Dale.
Next always year. Next year.
Yes, sir. Guys, appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, and happy Preakness Day.
Sounds
all right,
good.
Fellas, next week.
All right, we'll do it all over again next week on I Ask, They Answer, presented by the University of Louisville, Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, where racing comes to talk.